Better Leaders, Better Schools, episode number 12.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
Daniel, how many times have you heard people say, I'll be happy when, if I can just get this, if I can just, all the time, if I can just get that done, this done, then I'll be happy. Well, I'm going to tell you from experience, it doesn't scratch the itch like you think it's going to.
Hi, this is Daniel Bauer from Better Leaders, Better Schools. I help school leaders create a winning culture, focus on the essential, and lead with courage and integrity. The blog and podcast was made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Get more content and resources at betterleadersbetterschools.com. Better Leaders, do you need some winning leadership phrases? Download my free gift to you, The 15 Phrases of Effective School Leaders. The 15 Phrases of Effective School Leaders is an MP3 where I share a variety of phrases that have served me so well over the years in all my leadership positions. Get it now for free by texting PHRASES to 33444. That's PHRASES, PHRASES, to 33444, or by visiting the website betterleadersbetterschools.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Start your free 30-day trial and grab that free book right now at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. And now it's time for some 5-star reviews. Shaolin Soprano writes, epic new podcast. I'm all about higher education and a real educational system. This podcast is a must tune into show. 5 stars. All in Dan, glad to see, he writes. Great that you are stepping up to have an impact in a much needed area of society. Looking forward to see the change you create. Hello, this is Daniel from Better Leaders, Better Schools. I am honored and thrilled that you are listening today. Today's guest is Aaron Walker. He's a business and life coach who has inspired many through his leadership, mentorship, and consistent pursuit of excellence. He enjoys helping others and believes experience is a great teacher. 35 years of entrepreneurship and marriage have given Aaron a wealth of experience. Aaron continues to reach new heights and broaden his perspective of the terrain by examining his experiences and growing from them. Ladies and gents, I introduce to you Aaron Walker.
Hey, Daniel, thanks for having me on your show, man. What an honor. I really appreciate it.
Let me tell you, I've been looking forward to this show, I think, since you signed up, you know, for the podcast. And so often, if people are familiar with you, but in my experience, you do such a great job of building people up and encouraging them. And you didn't know I was going to do this, but I just want to encourage you right now. Just everything that you've offered through podcasts. I'm in your group called The Community, and we're going to talk about that. But I just really appreciate everything that you've done for me in the short time we've known each other. And the message of success to significance is so important today. I just want to thank you for that. Keep up the good work.
Well, thanks, Daniel. That makes me feel good, man. I feel all warm inside now. I appreciate that. That really made my day. Thank you.
Definitely. There's no problem there. So let's stick with that topic of success to significance. How did you land on that idea, and why is it so important, do you think?
Daniel, is it okay if I bring you and give you a little backstory, kind of take you back early on when I kind of started and work my way forward, and I can kind of tell you exactly how I got on this journey?
Yeah, I think the audience would really appreciate it. Go for it, Aaron.
I got to go way back to I was 13 years old, and my dad asked me to help him in the construction industry during the summer while I was out of school. And he was transforming this little place into a pawn shop in Madison, Tennessee, which is just north of Nashville. I'm a native Nashvillian. And I said, man, I'd love to do that, earn some money. That'd be great. So I helped him. Took us about 3 or 4 months. And then at the end of the remodel, I asked the guy that owned it. I said, listen, I just go to school down the street and I'd love to work here on Saturdays and after school, you know, late in the afternoons and maybe make a little money. Do you think you'd be interested? He said, how old are you? And I said, I'm 13. He said, you're hired. And I said, that's the shortest interview in history right there. It took 15 seconds and I had my first job. And so I'd go down there on Saturdays and work. And Daniel, I fell in love with that business. It was just incredible. The people that would come in, but I've got to admit something to you. It took me 2 weeks to figure out what a pawn shop was. I'd never even heard of a pawn shop. And I finally went up to Herb, the guy that owned the store, and I said, Mr. Berry, what is a pawn shop? These people keep bringing in these things and you give them money and then they come back. And he explained to me, you know, we're a small loan company and these people are just putting up for collateral. And man, the more I did it, the more I liked it. I got to deal in guns and then I got to deal in diamond rings and tools and stereos and guitars. And I thought, this is like playing, you know, you get to fool with this stuff every day. So as time went on, I fell in love with that business. I was 15 years old and decided I wanted to do that for a career. So this girl in my class named Lori Sanders, I asked her, I said, man, I got to figure out how to get out of here. She said, what do you mean you make it sound like prison? And I said, I want to work. I don't want to go to school. I want to work. She said, well, my brother did a co-op program and then he went and did summer school and night school for a little while and he was able to graduate early. So I marched myself straight down to the guidance counselor and I said, you got to help me figure out how to get out of here early. I want to work. So they did. I went to summer school and night school for about 18 months. And then at the beginning of my junior year, I had enough credits to graduate. Didn't have to go, you know, three-fourths of the day my junior year and didn't have to go at all my senior year. And met a couple of guys through that process that were buying diamond rings and gold jewelry to kind of hedge against inflation. They owned the 21st largest insurance agency in the country at the time. And so I went up to him one day and I said, what are you going to do with all those diamonds and that gold? He said, we're investing. We're putting it in a lockbox and hopefully someday we'll sell it and make some money. I said, why don't we take your money? Cause I don't have any. I've got experience. Let's open a pawn shop. And he asked me again, this is the second time I was asked this. He said, how old are you? And I said, I'm 18. He goes, we've never had anybody 18 years old approach us. And I said, well, that was the first time for everything.
That's right.
So he thought about it and he said, you know what? Let's talk about it. So I went to his office. We talked about it over a couple of months. And then he said, how much will it cost to open a pawn shop? Well, I didn't know. I didn't have a clue. You know, I'm brand new. So I went back, did as much study and due diligence as I could do and presented a very rough business plan. And I said, this was in the 70s, Daniel. Don't forget, that was a long time ago. I said, it'll cost $150,000 to open this store. Well, that's a lot of money. Today, that's a lot of money, yeah. Much less when you're 18. And so they thought about it, checked on me, and they said, let's do it. So I went in third partners with two other guys. We opened our first pawn shop, and it was hugely successful. By the time I was 21, we had it paid for. It took 36 months. We paid off a 10-year loan. And the Lord just blessed it. He just did. I don't know what else to say. It was hard work, you know. I always tell everybody I work like it depends on me and I trust like it depends on the Lord. And that's what happened in this situation. It just worked out. I got married 2 weeks out of high school when Robin graduated. My childhood sweetheart, we got married. We just celebrated 35 years, by the way, Daniel.
Congratulations.
Just 2 months ago. So we decided to live intentionally. And we said, we're not going to do like everybody else. We're not going to go out and get the great big house and a great big car. We can afford it, but we're not going to do it. We're going to pour all the money back into the business. Daniel, we did that three more consecutive times. And by the time I was 27 years old, we had four stores. They were doing extremely well. And a company called Cash America came to town. And they wanted to grow through acquisitions rather than through startups. They're a Fortune 500 company, and they made me an offer, and I couldn't refuse it. So it took about 90 days to go through the process. I was 27 years old. I was done. So I came from nothing, literally nothing. My parents never made any money. My dad never made over $15,000 a year in his life. I know all about being broke and poor, but my dad taught me a lot about character. My mom taught me a lot about grit and determination. And so I just exercised that and used it through this process. I tell everybody that I make up in education with grit and determination. And so I poured that hard work into the business and it worked. But here's what I found out, Daniel, years later. We got to fast forward now. I found out it could have been one of my biggest mistakes in selling the business early on because I had nothing planned to do afterwards and I became extremely bored. I gained 50 pounds in 18 months. I was getting in the bed in the middle of the day. I was very depressed because I had no purpose. I had no reason to get up. I had a little bit of money And we had enough for ourselves. And so I didn't have to do anything. So I hunted and fished and played golf. Let me tell you something. That's fun for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're not moving the needle and you're not helping other people be successful and you don't have a purpose, you'll get depressed pretty quick. So my wife woke me up from a nap one day and she said, you got to do something. I don't care if you get a job. I don't care if you go back in business for yourself, but you got to do something. I went back to the pawn shop, went partners with the guy I'd started with when I was a kid. We built that four times the size over the next 10 years that it was when we started.
Wow.
Then my life changed forever. August 1st, 2001, I was headed to the office and a pedestrian crossed the street, didn't look my way, and I ran over him. And he didn't make it. He lived 3 days in the Vanderbilt trauma unit. And my life changed forever that day. The paradigm shift of my life, the focus of my life changed that day, that August 1st, 2001. I went to my partner, said, Robin and I have elected to sell. We're going to get out. We've chased the money long as we're going to do it, and we're going to take a break. So I took the next 5 years off. I didn't do anything. We traveled. We built another house. We kind of got our legs back under us, and Robin come up to me again. She said, you're getting fat and lazy again. It's time you were doing something. And so I did. I went in the construction industry with the guy that built the house for us. So loved his work. He said, what do you need me to do? And I said, you just do what you do. I'll do what I do, and we'll form a partnership, and we'll take this business to the next level. The next 8 years, Daniel, we took the construction industry to number one 3 consecutive years in Middle Tennessee. And then at 50 years old, I decided to retire for the third time. I said, I've retired more than the law allows. And I retired, and my buddies, Dave Ramsey and Dan Miller and Ken Abraham, some of those guys that I'm in mastermind group with now for 2 decades, they said, you're too young to quit. You cannot quit. You got too much experience.
Right.
You've got too much wisdom when it comes to the marriage side of it, and you need to coach people. And I said, I'm not coaching anybody. I'm not doing anything. I'm quitting. And they said, no, you're not. Dave Ramsey said, come to Entree Leadership on me. I'll treat you. That was a pretty nice present, too. That's an expensive course. I went through that and loved it. Dan Miller said, all right, come on to Innovate. And I went to Innovate. I loved that, too. It was like, I loved it. So I'm headed home that night. Dan Miller texted me. He goes, Aaron, did you see those guys sitting at your table? They were leaning in. All your experience, right. The businesses you've owned. You've got something to say, man. You need to coach. And then I really started thinking about it. I said, well, maybe I do have something. You know, I got 8 businesses and 30-something years of business, and prayed about it. Robin and I talked about it, and we said, let's go for it. So I started View from the Top. Man, the floodgates have opened. We have clients now all over, and we do mastermind groups, and you're participating in the community, and we're just having the time of our life. So, man, I just gave you 37 years in 3 minutes, but that's kind of my journey, Daniel.
Yeah, not everybody can do that, give that sort of overview in such a concise way, but we definitely appreciate that story. I do want to get to the services you offer in terms of the community Iron Sharpens Iron in just a little bit. But there's, like you said, there's so much wisdom even within that story I want to pick apart. And I know you talked about bringing that construction business to number one there in your area of Tennessee. Recently, in a church service, we were really talking about, am I a person that views the world? Does my perspective make me look at the world as one with abundance or scarcity? And you didn't share in that story, but I've heard you talk about it before, that you guys would share business partners, business plans, leads. Can you talk a little bit about how that viewpoint of abundance really served you well in the construction industry?
Absolutely. And it is without a question that way. It is out of abundance. Let me tell you what something we did that was fun in the construction industry. So we were considered kind of an elite builder.
Okay.
Here in Nashville. There was about 10 or 12 guys. And so we got together and we formed an alliance, and it's called the Master Custom Builder Council. Instead of fighting, and, you know, we formed an alliance, and we got together. We started meeting on the fourth Thursday of every month. We started pooling our resources together in regards to subcontractors and vendors. We started inviting the vendors to our meetings to speak, and they wanted our business. We said, well, collectively, the last year I was in that builder group, those 10 builders, we did $115 million in business. Well, vendors want a piece of that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So they're willing to bid and give you better prices because you're buying as a group. Well, when you get a better price, you can pass that on to the customer, which in turn gives you more customers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did the same thing with vendors. We did the same thing with subcontractors. We would get together and we would say, what's working for you? You know, and we would compete against each other. We would bid on houses to build, but we knew everybody was fair. They were honest because we dealt with them on a weekly basis and we met monthly. So the people were honorable. They're men of character. And we knew that the bid would be honest. It wouldn't be somebody undercutting each other. And so people got a better house as a result of it. We did a parade of homes every year where people would have a parade of homes. Each builder would have one or two houses, and we would invite the vendors in to participate in that. They would give us discounts and a lot of times free merchandise, which we would pass to the customer. So it helped everybody. It was a win for the vendor because they were getting a lot of sales. It was a win for the builder because we were getting discounted prices. It was a win for the client because they were getting a cheaper price because we were buying in bulk and volume. And we were getting along with each other, empowering, encouraging, giving documents. We were supporting each other. See, that's what success is in every business I've had. It's about giving. It's not about taking. See, relationships are about what you bring, not what you get. Gary Vaynerchuk wrote a book, Jab, 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 Right Hook. And the premise of it is the boxing analogy. You give, you give, you give, and then you have permission to ask. It's a lot easier to get a yes when you give and given and given, right? It's like a date. You don't walk up and try to kiss the girl on the first date. You know, you hold her hand, you tell her how pretty she is, and then you can. That's what I did with my wife. You know, you don't just get to. It's the same way. It's the same premise. We've got to give, we've got to give, we've got to give. When you have a servant's heart and you do that in any business, I don't care if it's service or I don't care if it's a widget, you can apply that principle.
Yeah, and that applies so well to schools. And honestly, the environment is sort of cutthroat these days because a lot of districts are moving to something called student-based budgeting. So instead of just getting a lump sum for your school to operate, hire the teachers, you know, run all the different programs and all that, each student is worth X amount of $1,000. And specifically in Chicago, it's become a very cutthroat type of environment where everyone's fighting over the students. So it's easy to have those hands closed as fists and to operate in a scarcity model. But that's just not what success is about. You know, according to you, what experience has taught me, you know, life and success is really about giving. And when you operate out of that philosophy of abundance, like you said, that can be a win for the students, the teachers, and communities. You know, meeting regularly, pulling the resources together. I mean, this is why we're in the business. So I truly appreciate that point of view. Now, also going back to your story, you talked about how your anecdotes that you'd like to share there and how you developed character, grit, and determination from your parents.
Well, I would. We'll start with my dad. I'll tell you a little bit about him. My dad never cared about money. My dad was not a businessman at all. My dad wanted to hunt and fish, spend time with the family, and hang out with people that we knew. Relationships were paramount for my dad. When my dad died in 06, I stood at the casket with my two brothers and my sister and my mom, and we greeted people for 6.5 hours. It was an hour and a half wait to get through the line. So I heard hundreds, if not thousands of people say, let me tell you what your dad did for me. Let me tell you how your dad was there when I needed him. Let me tell you how your dad gave me a word of encouragement. Let me tell you what your dad, on and on and on, Daniel. I mean, for 6.5 hours, not one person said your dad had a nice boat. He had a nice house.
Right.
He had a nice car. Not one person. And I thought, how ironic is that, that we spend 95% of our time obtaining physical possessions that the vast majority of the people don't care about. They only care about the relationship. And my dad lived that all through my adult life, all through my childhood. He lived that. And then I thought, that's what we need to do in business, because if people realize really how much you're interested in them, think about your analogy with the kids. Instead of fighting over the kids for the money and the revenue and this and that, what if the teachers got up there and said, listen, we're going to do this for the benefit of the child. It's for their education. What can we do to make them better? How can we pour into them to empower them, to encourage them? What if the kids heard that argument It was like, they really care about me. They're really interested in my well-being. It's not for the funds or the districts or how they're related, but it's about the person. And that's what business has done for me and taught me, is I had to determine back when I had that wreck, I thought, I've been living my whole life inward focus. I've been looking inside. And that's what it sounds like some of these districts are doing. You know, it's all about them. It's all about that district, not about the benefit of others. And I had to decide for myself, what do I want to do? First of all, I want to be successful. I want to make money. I hate it when people that have money say, money's not important. I want to go, you liar. It is important. Just don't make it your primary aim. Don't make it your central focus. You know, make the person out there that's important. Make that the central focus. And then I said, what is success? What do I determine for me, Aaron Walker? What is successful to me? And some of the things that I just jotted down when I was going through that exercise was, I love to choose my own schedule, right? I don't want to punch a clock. I want to be able to choose my own schedule. If I want to go fishing, I can. If I want to play golf, I can. If I want to work, I can. That's pretty cool. That's successful. Having financial freedom, you know, you don't have the worries of paying the electric bill or whatever. I was going to say car note, but I don't have a car note. I don't want you to have a car note either. None of you out there need a car note. So just hear me. The other thing was an engaging family. I wanted meaningful relationships. I wanted to be able to have a clear conscience in every transaction that I did. I already told you twice I gained 50 pounds. I said, you knucklehead, you need to start taking care of yourself physically. I only got one body, and I need to take care of myself. And another thing that I've realized is learn to be content without being complacent. And people say, what does that mean? See, happiness is a choice. It's not a trait. And we elect to be happy in our present circumstance. Do you want to stay there always? Because sometimes it's not good. No, don't be complacent. Don't sit on the couch and watch reruns of Andy Griffith. You know, get out there and go for it. Do something, but learn to enjoy. Daniel, how many times have you heard people say, I'll be happy when, if I can just get this, if I can just, all the time, if I can just get that done, this done, then I'll be happy. Well, I want to tell you from experience, it doesn't scratch the itch like you think it's going to. It just doesn't. Be mindful of the ladder you're leaning your wall on. And then I thought, okay, I got it down. I know what success is. And then I wanted to leave a legacy of wisdom, right? I wanted my daughters to say, and my wife, when I do pass away, he was a wise guy. So for me, that was success. Then I got to thinking, what about significance? How can we be significant? You know, and I started thinking about, for me personally, it's really meeting the needs of others. And it's learning to fully engage people, listen intently, and stop waiting your turn to talk. Daniel, have you ever been at a restaurant, you're having lunch with somebody, and they're more interested in who's coming in the door and who's sitting at the next table than they are with this conversation that you're in? You know, they're just looking left and looking right. I want to encourage your listeners not to do that. And it's hard, but I want you to focus. I want you to look at the person in the eye and kind of put blinders up, if you will, imaginary blinders, and do not look left and right, but engage. You will watch the conversation change dramatically because they're thinking, he's engaging. He's really interested in what I'm saying. And don't sit there and only be thinking about what you're going to say. That's where 9/10 of the conversations go, is you don't even hear what they're saying. You're just thinking about what you're fixing to say. And when you fully engage people, they're going to think he is really interested in me, not in the peripheral things that are going on. And then I said, I want to learn to help others when they can't repay me, because my motives sometimes as a businessman can get skewed. And I can think, if I'll do this, if I write Daniel this thank you note, maybe he'll get me on another podcast, or maybe he'll, you know what I'm saying? Maybe he'll do this or that. And then I thought, no, don't do that. Help some people that can't repay you, right? Go out there and do something for somebody intentionally. We've made a little fun thing. We do it with our grandkids. We love to go to Waffle House. And so we'll go to Waffle House and we'll pick out a couple of tables and we'll say, hey, tell the waitress, we want their check and we want their check. And my grandkids giggle, you know, and we'll get in the car and they'll talk about it the whole time. And they'll say, Big A, they call me Big A. They say, Big A, do you think they knew it was us? I said, it's not important that they knew it was us. What was important is we paid it forward. We did something nice for people. We did Black Friday that way. I took all four grandkids and we went to the nursing home, gave out chocolate to these old people. And then we went to Vanderbilt Children's Hospital and gave toys out to all the kids. And then we went and had a milkshake. And then we came home. My 7-year-old granddaughter came up. She said, Big A, this has been the best day of my life. And she hugged me. And I thought, you know what? We don't spend enough time doing these things because we did nothing for her. It was all for the senior adults. It was all for the children that was in the hospital at the Christmas time. And she said, this has been the best day of my life. And I thought, that's significant. Those are the things we need to be doing as adults.
Better leaders, are you looking to upgrade your leadership potential? I have another free gift for you. This one is a PDF which I call 15 Questions Guaranteed to Unlock Your Leadership Potential. Unlock your leadership potential now for free by texting UNLOCK NOW, that's all one word and no spaces, to 33444. Text UNLOCK NOW to 33444 and start reflecting on the 15 questions guaranteed to unlock your leadership potential. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. That's betterleadersbetterschools.com/book to start your 30-day free trial right now.
You know, and Aaron, I want to challenge you in saying we didn't do anything, you know, for your granddaughter there, that the fact is you were forming a human being into a person of significance, and that people focus, that person important, that relational focus is a muscle that we have to develop. And so not everybody can go to Waffle House with you and say, I got that table and this table and we're going to take care of their checks. So for people, leaders in schools, that this doesn't come naturally, what are some things that you do? You talked about having blinders on and being mindful while you're sitting across the table from someone and sharing a meal. But besides that, and doing some monetary, you know, nice and generous things, what are some ways we can develop that person, other-oriented, you know, perspective?
When I said earlier we didn't do anything for the grandchildren, I meant we didn't buy them a toy.
Right,
we didn't
right.
do things for them. But you're right. It was instilling a great amount of significance into their little lives, and they learn. We're teaching them generosity. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people have challenged me in the past, and they've said, well, if I had the kind of money you did, I would do those things also. And I sit there for a minute and I think, how am I going to say this tactfully? And I say, you know, quite honestly, you probably wouldn't, because money doesn't change your heart. It magnifies what's already there. Hmm. So if you're not doing it on a much smaller scale now, you don't have to pick up a whole dinner, but what about a cup of coffee at Starbucks? What about doing something that doesn't cost any money that is inconvenient? What about going to the nursing home and just investing in those people because there's so many people there that have nobody right. coming to see them? What about acts of generosity, just random acts of kindness that doesn't cost anything? If you're not doing that now, you can do it. You can learn to do it. Maybe you haven't thought of it. Maybe I'm just spurring on some thoughts, and that's great. But don't think because you had a lot of money you would do it. And all I'm saying is start out small, do random acts of kindness that don't cost you anything, and work your way up, and then just periodically do things for other people. I wanted to also say that in my business that we've always tried to provide above and beyond the minimal requirements. And I think that is true for everybody in any industry they're in. You can give more than you're charging for. You can give more value. You can give more product. Go above and beyond. To me, that is significant. The other thing is people say, well, you should give. You've got money. And see, I don't want to should anything. I don't like people to should me. You know, it's like I want to give because I want to, not because I should. It's a matter of the heart. It's like, if you got $10 or $1 million, you should give out of the generosity, the abundance, like we were talking about earlier. We give because we want to. The other thing for significance is not realizing that the world, not thinking that the world revolves around you, is you need to prioritize your goal with others in mind. So whatever you're doing, think about the family, think about your peers and colleagues. Robin and I delayed gratification for the greater advancement of others early on. We used to, years ago, give a scholarship award to eighth graders. We went to Neely's Bend Junior High School, where I went to school. That school so impacted my life. I went back and I said, for the student that tries the hardest, I don't care what their grades are, the teachers vote. Ever what student tries the hardest in the eighth grade this year, I'm going to give them a scholarship award to go towards their education. We tracked those kids for years. They turned out, this was in a very, very low socioeconomic area. Those kids now had hope because they had this little small scholarship that could go towards their education. They turned out to be nurses, officers in the military. They went on to advance their education, all because they had a little bit of hope. And see, you can do that also. You can prioritize your goals with others in mind. You can delay your personal gratification for the greater advancement of others if you plan on I need some water. I've talked so much, I've made my throat. But the other thing, the last thing is I want people to have the ability to have the foresight to invest long term so that you could potentially change generations to come. Don't think about next week. Don't think about 90 days from now, but think long term.
I love everything you were saying there. And I think if there is a call to action for today's school leaders from this episode specifically, it's just to consider how you can develop those generosity muscles. So what are small things you can do around the school for your staff, for your students every single day, for your parents? How do you instill hope into the environment? And what I love, I mean, it does apply to business, but in your school, what if we all as schools became a place of where we're known for over delivering, where they know that the kids are going to be taught exceedingly well in every subject within the school that you lead. This is a game changer. So thank you so much for sharing those insights.
Yeah, thanks, Daniel. I appreciate that.
So we've talked about a lot of nice stuff and wisdom and things you've learned. But one of the questions I love asking my guests, you know, we often learn the most from our failures. So in terms of your leadership, the multiple companies you've owned and ran, what has maybe been your biggest leadership mistake and what did you learn from it?
Well, not paying attention enough to the people that are actually doing the work. A lot of the times when you're in the ivory tower, it doesn't work out exactly like you might think. If you go out and spend time more with the people that are actually on the front lines doing the work, I think oftentimes you can learn a lot. So just be careful making decisions from afar. Mm-hmm. You know, Lee Iacocca was really, really successful because he'd go out on the lines with the people that were manufacturing the cars. He would listen to them. And I think the listening skills I would improve on radically if I had it to go back. I would really, really listen well. I would talk less, you know, and I would listen better. So a failure for me was I made the decisions because I could. And just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. Mm-hmm. And I would just encourage people to really exercise authority carefully. Because if you're in a position that you can make the decision because you can, that's a very dangerous place to be. So just be mindful of the things that you do. Be mindful of the people that you listen to and use extreme caution and care with exercising authority.
With everything you offer, Aaron, at View from the Top, there's a lot going on. So how do you avoid distractions and stay focused?
It's not easy. And I can't say I'm always extremely focused. You know, you try to. Greg McCowan wrote a great book called Essentialism. And in that book, he teaches us to get the vital few things on our plate and get rid of the non-essentials. And he teaches in that book how to stop being a mile wide and an inch deep. And he tells you, man, focus on two or three things, be an inch wide and a mile deep. Now we've got something that means something. We've got something you can monetize. We've got something that has value with your family. None of us can do 15 things well, but you take that same energy and you apply it to two or three things. Now we've got an expert. And so I would just say plan well. My friend and mentor, Dan Miller, a year in advance, he will do his calendar. And I've watched him year after year after year. And I said, Dan, how do you quit chasing the shiny objects? He said, because I predetermined what my year is going to look like. And when that opportunity presents itself, if it doesn't fit the mold, I get rid of it. And I've not up to a year, but I'm up to 6 months. And so I'm working my way there. My ADD sometimes wouldn't allow me to do maybe a year, but it'll allow me to do 6 months. Tom Schwab, my COO, and I just went to Nashville, Indiana, and we spent 2 days in a cabin in the woods, and we did nothing but plan. And we planned all the way from now all the way through the first part of 2016. Now, when those things come along that are distractions, we look at our plan and we go, nope, we can't do that because it's not on our plan. The people that are really successful have a plan. And if your plan's not written, it's just a dream. It's not a goal. And so you should really be specific in your plan, stick to it, do the mundane things, regimented daily, and you'll be more productive.
Sir, and I know you just mentioned Essentialism is a great book that helps you, I guess, identify the boundaries between the vital, essential things that you need to do and the non-essential. Would that be the book you recommend every principal should read right now, or is there another text that even trumps Essentialism?
You know, for right now, I'll have to say Essentialism is probably the best book I've read in the past 3 years. There's a classic out there called How to Win Friends and Influence People, and it was written back in the 30s by Carnegie. And if you hadn't read that, it ought to be required reading in school for people to read that book. It's an excellent read. But Essentialism, I need to call Greg McCowan because I've promoted his book. He needs to start giving me an affiliate link or something. But it seriously is an incredible book. One of my clients texted me today and he said, I'm through page 80. And he said, unbelievable. And he just can't get over the nuggets. And I know, Daniel, you've read that book, and the value of that book is just, it's incredible. So yeah. Yeah, get Essentialism. You got
to
read it.
Yeah, and just to make fun of myself, you gave me a hard time for not reading yet How to Win Friends and Influence People. So I got that on the reading list. Well,
I'll tell you another good book, as long as we're talking about books. Bob Berg wrote a great book called Adversary into Allies. And it's kind of How to Win Friends and Influence People on steroids. I mean, Bob is a great guy. I interviewed him last Wednesday for the community, and he did a fabulous job. But it teaches us how to take a bad situation and turn it into good. So for any leader, these are the kind of books you need to be reading.
Yeah, and I'll also recommend Adversaries into Allies. I'm reading that one with you in the community. So I appreciate our time together. I'm really want to pick your brain before we talk about the community and iron sharpens iron. One last question here. I ask all school leaders, if resources were not an obstacle, right? The only limitation was your imagination. How would you build a school? And I always look forward to asking school leaders that question because it translates so easily, right? That's our industry. We need to be experts in it. But you as a businessman, how would you build a school? I'm fascinated what you would say.
Well, one of the first things that I would do on a junior level is I would start mastermind groups in the school, in the setting. I would have the kids come together with a facilitator, and I would prepare them for masterminding, where you come together collectively and you get everyone's perspective. Daniel, let's admit it. Everybody doesn't learn the same, right? There's different people. I've got a friend of mine, this son is homeschooled, and he can't sit at a desk. And everybody says, medicate him or do it. I'm like, he's different. He's just a different kid. But he can do certain things hands-on. He is a champion. This guy learned. We learn. So there's not one way to teach kids. There's so many opportunities to find out about that child and how they retain things, whether it's visually, through hearing, you know. Audible books are not good for me because it's good for me to visually see it. I can underline. I can go back and reread it. If I hear it, I may not retain it. And so just for me, nothing against audiobooks. They're okay, but they're just not for me. I don't learn that well with them. Same way in school. I would get the kids together and I would learn individually the best way to teach that child to learn. And then I would separate them depending on their abilities, their skills, the way that they could learn, their interest level. And I think the basic core curriculums, and we've got to get all that stuff down. But we would produce a lot better students if we would do that. I went back to Belmont and took a couple of adult classes when I was in my 40s. And I'm sitting there, and the teachers hated me because I wasn't there to try to get good grades. I was there because there was a couple of things. I took a religion class and I took a finance class, and the professor was up there teaching about real estate, and he was teaching, you know, how to make money. And when he got finished, or there was a lady, actually, she got finished, and I raised my hand, and she goes, "Yes, Mr. Walker, what is it?" And I said, "That's inaccurate." And she looked at me, and the class started laughing. These kids were 20, 21 years old, and I'm 40-something. She goes, "Oh, is that right, Mr. Walker?" And I said, "Yes. You didn't mention recovering depreciation, and it's a real big variable when you're dealing with real estate." And the class turned and looked at her, you know, and she said, "Well, Mr. Walker, hypothetically, you're right." I said, "No, technically, I'm right. I know I do this all the time." She goes, "Well, you know what? The book doesn't teach it that way, but I'll have to admit you are right." I said, "Well, why don't y'all teach them that way? They get out there in the world and they don't know what they're doing, and they wonder why they're messing up. They're not succeeding because we're not teaching them properly. Just because it's not written in that book doesn't mean you shouldn't teach it." She agreed, and we went on, you know. But anyway, I got a pretty good grade in that class. It wasn't because she wanted to give it to me, but that's the way I think we ought to teach our kids. Let's teach them common sense. Let's teach them practical application, things that will work, not just because it's in the book.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Common sense and practical application, these drive a lot of what we do in our schools today. The book doesn't teach it that way. It cannot be a default answer of why, I guess, a young learner's opportunity to learn and grow was quenched there. The idea of learning being individualized, you're spot on with that. And this isn't rocket science. We know that's the best way to teach, but it's also difficult. So I just encourage all school leaders to equip their staffs to remove any barriers and obstacles from individualized learning so that we can really meet the needs of every single student. And then lastly, you touched on masterminds. So I think this is a great segue to talk about some of the services you offer at View from the Top, because I know that you lead some masterminds for guys. And so do you mind just sharing what you offer at View from the Top and then basically how people can get a hold of you?
Thanks. I appreciate that. I have a real passion for accountability groups and mastermind groups. I've been involved in those now for over 3 decades. I started out with accountability groups where I met with 3 men, and we met weekly and we talked about the tough things of life, so that we would hold each other accountable for going forward, being successful. Mastermind groups came on the horizon when Dave Ramsey invited me to join his personal group. And I can attribute a huge amount of my success to that collective energy, mind, direction, empowering, and encouraging of those 10 guys. And so when I started coaching, I thought, I'm going to replicate that. I'm going to do it because people have been asking me about that for years. I'm actually writing a book right now called An Eagle's View. And it's about my time with the Eagles. That was the name of our group for over a decade. So that'll be coming out in the spring. But I decided to replicate what I had been doing for 20 or 30 years. And we started Iron Sharpens Iron. And it's from Proverbs in the Bible. It's where iron sharpens iron, so as one man sharpens another. And you come together, and a lot of the times, Daniel, the things that I need to say to you, you may not like, but if I've built a relationship with you, you'll take it because I've earned the right to say it. Oftentimes, there was something recently I was going to do. Robin goes, "What about your guys? What'd they say?" I said, "I hadn't polled them yet, but I will." 9 of the 10 guys said, "Don't do it." And it was 11 of the 12 guys, because I had a couple other guys. And I said, I had no clue because I didn't think about it from their perspective. And it really saved me a lot of grief ultimately, because there's power in the consensus of the multitudes. And I'm like, if that many guys said I shouldn't do it, I'm probably not going to do it. And I didn't. Probably saved me a big headache. So I replicated that. Now we have Iron Sharpens Iron. We meet 1 hour a week on a virtual conference room. We use Zoom. It's kind of like Skype. All 10 guys get in the room. We meet at the same time. We go through books together. We share goals. We hold each other accountable. And it's doing life together with all these guys. The community is something else that you mentioned that we do. I know you're a great advocate of the community, and you're a huge participant in that, and I thank you for that. But we've got guys joining from all over the world, sharing their resources, giving their comments, their wisdom, their knowledge, their experience. We've got guys that are just starting to be an entrepreneur, and we've got one guy in there that ran a $600 million company. So we've got such a diverse group of guys in there that share a lot of wisdom. It's a webinar every Wednesday night at 5 o'clock. I teach for an hour. We have a lot of interaction, communication with the people. They can send me questions. We'll talk about those. And here's the best part of all, Daniel. It's $37.
That's a steal. I mean,
it's a cup of coffee a day, right, at McDonald's. $37. You get yourself involved in all these relationships with people all over the world. And so we just started to do it to be able to have another entry point to view from the top. And it's just a very small fee to pay to have such good value.
Yeah, so I just want to thank you again for setting up the community. I encourage everybody to check that out. And, you know, if iron sharpens iron and joining one of Aaron's mastermind groups is down your alley, the way it will accelerate your personal and professional growth, I can't speak to enough. Aaron's the real deal. Got a heart of gold and so much wisdom. And I just really encourage everybody to check out his resources there. So, Aaron, do you have any parting pieces of guidance for the listeners?
You know, there's two things that I try to share at the end of most episodes that I've been on with people, and there's two things. A lot of things are people are afraid, and that holds most entrepreneurs back. And I've got a little slogan that I've lived by is fear missing an opportunity more than you fear failure. I just couldn't lay in bed at night and think, would it have worked? I've got to try it. The second thing, my mom as a child raised me, she wouldn't allow us to say can't. She said, you may not be able to do it, but you're going to at least try. And she had a little saying that said, can't, couldn't do it, and could did it all. So I have implemented both of those strategies in my life, and it's paid dividends well. So I would just encourage you not to be afraid. Fear missing an opportunity more than you fear failure. And if you want to do it, go out there because can't, couldn't do it, but could did it all.
Well, thanks again so much for your time, Aaron. I really appreciate it.
Hey, I've got a little gift for your audience. Do you care if I give them something?
Oh, we want to give them. Yeah, let's hook them up.
I've got a little gift I want to give you. Okay, so early on, I told you that there's three documents that I deal with every day. One is called a personal assessment. One is called What Do I Want? Discovering the things that you want to live your life intentionally. The third one's called Steps to a Productive Day, where you start your morning out very early. You go through the entire day. I've written a landing page called viewfromthetop.com/better, B-E-T-T-E-R, all in lowercase. And I've taken any prices off of these documents. I've made them for free, and I want to give them to your audience. So they go there, download those. I hope it's a catalyst to move you forward so that you can have a life of success and significance.
Well, that's amazing. So just to review, it's the personal assessment, What Do I Want, and Steps to a Productive Day. They can get that at viewfromthetop.com/better.
Daniel, thanks, buddy. I enjoyed it. Had a great time. You're a wonderful host, and I appreciate you having me on.
Thanks again, Aaron.
Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Please leave a 5-star rating and review for us. Click the podcast artwork and long press the Show Some Love link. This helps the show stay relevant in iTunes and reach a wider audience that wants to become a better leader. If you'd like to connect with me, there are also links in the show notes. The blog and podcast has an audience in over 100 countries, and I would love to connect with you. Connect via email, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and the website.